I guess I'll just ask the first question on the list. And, so, Ms. Quinn, how would you strengthen the city's relationship with Hinds County and state officials, which has been rocky at times?
It has been rocky. People tend to be able to work together better when they really know each other. And you speak of Hinds County officials and state officials. The fact that I grew up here in Jackson, I know many of the Hinds County officials and the state officials. In terms of how I would improve that relationship, is one good start is to just meet with them periodically and just to have scheduled meetings. I know a number of the Board of Supervisors, the supervisors that are within the Hinds County Board, and in terms of the police department, of course, Sheriff Tyrone Lewis and I grew up together. Mm-hmm. So that, I believe that that would be a big help as well. The sheriff grew up on Skyline Drive. I grew up on Ridgeway Street in Ward 3. We went to church together. We went to school together. He ultimately graduated from Lanier High School. I graduated from Mara. But we've still stayed in constant contact and certainly have been corresponding through this process in terms of what's needed for the city of Jackson. In terms of the Hinds County Board of Supervisors, I've been practicing law in Jackson for about 25 years. So I know the board members, certainly Peggy Hobson Calhoun, whom I've known since many years since I know started practicing law over 25 years ago. Of course, Kenneth Stowe's been a city councilman, and I know him through that and just the fact that he was a city council person of Ward 3. I grew up in Ward 3, so certainly have a relationship with him.
I have to ask right there.
Yes.
Do you have a good relationship with Mr. Stokes?
Well, from the standpoint of this, Supervisor Stokes at this point, I would say so. I would say so. You know, in terms of Supervisor Stokes, when I was in private practice back with Irvin and Quinn, I have to think back now the number of years when we started that firm in 1990. Certainly a professional relationship, you know, with him. The first intern that we had at JSU in terms of the Office of General Counsel was Keisha Stokes, Supervisor Stokes' daughter. Mm-hmm. Brilliant young lady. She's now practicing law. I believe she is a court clerk. But she graduated from Jackson State University, and she was, graduated number one in her class and went on to Harvard Law School. Mm-hmm. So she was a great asset to our office there. But the other supervisors, certainly a professional relationship with, and can call upon them and work with them, I believe, to move the city of Jackson forward and to move Hinds County forward. So I would say it would start with a relationship and build on that.
And let me just do the follow-up, then I'll pass it along, because you mentioned Sheriff Lewis. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that people have said to us, which is mm-hmm. some of what we're going to ask you about today, doesn't mean it's particularly our concerns necessarily, but mm-hmm. that have said to us is that we've been told that Sheriff Lewis is behind your campaign. And so you just talked a little bit about your relationship mm-hmm. with him, which was actually the question. But is he involved in your campaign, or was he involved in asking you to run, anything like
no,
that?
No, not involved in asking me to run. But certainly he is a person that I have reached out to and just asked in terms of gaining support. Anytime you're running for a political office and people that you know who have run for a political office before, mm-hmm. you certainly confer with them, and I have with a number of city and county and mm-hmm. state officials, and no less so for Tyrone Lewis. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he is the sheriff of Hinds County and mm-hmm. City of Jackson is in Hinds County, I think it would certainly be prudent of me to, you know, reach out to him as I have with others as well. And particularly with the issues that we have regarding crime in this city, he has not endorsed me in terms of that. But I certainly would be seeking, to gain the support of those who are elected officials and just business persons, and mm-hmm. and just will continue to do that.
Now, do you have a relationship with the district attorney?
With Robert Shula Smith,
uh-huh.
I do. I know Robert from the fact that he, of course, grew up in Jackson, mm-hmm. and his father, of course, and the businessman that he was. But my relationship with Robert, I got to know Robert better when I was general counsel at Jackson mm-hmm. State, And, of course, through some of the legal issues that we had involving JSU and just discussing some of those issues and mm-hmm. just working with him through those.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me let somebody else in here. Oh, Todd. Here, pass this down.
I'll jump in here. Ms. Quinn, you kind of explained, you kind of covered some of this in your Jackson Free Press interview, but mm-hmm. can you just explain the circumstances behind your two bankruptcies and explain how you're going to reassure the public that they won't affect your ability to manage the city finances, because obviously that's what Mayor Johnson touts as one of his strengths.
Well, I won't say that it won't affect, because the effect will be there, but it will be in a good way. Okay, and I just want to make that clear to the Jackson public. That being the case, in terms of the circumstances surrounding it, I put myself through law school, and certainly law school is pretty expensive, and so you get help from family to do that, but it could be quite expensive. But also, I started and just decided to go into private practice. I started out in a small personal injury firm with Walker & Walker, and gained a great deal in terms of being associated with that firm. But after a year, I decided to go to the Attorney General's office and work for Attorney General Mike Moore, and I represented the Department of Finance and Administration. And during that time, I got to know my former law partner, and that was Herbert Irvin. He represented the Department of Banking, in the Treasurer's Office, and a number of financial institutions. I represented DFA. And we just thought that it would be an extremely beneficial thing to ourselves as well as to the Jackson community to create an African-American corporate law firm. Mm-hmm. It was kind of non-existent back then. There was one attorney, Frank Stemley, who was now deceased, and Frank was the only corporate attorney. Mm-hmm. And just wanted to get into the area, knew that we were interested in promoting economic development within that community. And so we sought to do that. And as young people would have it, and undercapitalized and have to wear so many hats, it's just a lot to do. And that's the thing with small businesses. And if one, I don't know whether Harvey Johnson has ever been in private practice or in a private business, but when you're doing that, you certainly have a lot of challenges to meet, to overcome, and one was being undercapitalized. Mm-hmm. So, and the other thing, quite frankly, was the fact that we represented a number of nonprofits mm-hmm. and a number of small businesses. A lot of times you start to represent clients. It may not start out being pro bono, but it ends up mm-hmm. it ends up being pro bono. And I won't name them, but just with those nonprofits and with some of those small businesses, we just had the attitude that we would just get the work done. And that's just what we did. We just continued to get the work done for them. And just it became a situation where just had debt that got to the point that we knew we needed to reorganize, and that's what we did. So we saw an attorney, got a bankruptcy plan in place, executed that plan, and implemented it and came out of bankruptcy. And then a little later on, when I was at JSU and just dealing with some of the mounting debt that I had that probably should have been in there the first time around, but realized that I had some issues there that I needed to revisit. So I ended up having to file again, and interestingly enough, that's not uncommon with people. When that's required, you have to take the tough medicine. You have to, when you're in a hole, stop digging. And that's what I did. And interestingly enough, there were numerous occasions when I counseled business owners and clients about, this is a situation you really need to pull the trigger and go ahead and file. Right. And I can't recall a client yet that was just eager to do that. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do it.
Right.
But situation is that you have to do it, and you do it, and you turn your economic life around, and I did that. And the reason I mentioned the fact that I think it would be good for the city from the standpoint of this, when you're in a situation when you know that you've got some tough challenges to meet and you can face them head on, and you can work through that is an extremely rewarding situation, particularly when you can do that and then redirect your life and accomplish some great things. The fact that I filed for bankruptcy is really a small part of the story of my life. Mm-hmm. From being general counsel at Jackson State and working through just a number of issues, whether they be legal or business, and some of those other things I was able to accomplish. And in addition to that, the subdivision that I developed, it was quite rewarding. But I think that the citizens of Jackson certainly should know that I understand, having gone through that, how, you know, you're either going to increase your revenue or you're going to reduce your costs. And, you know, I think that that's a lesson for the city of Jackson to learn. We got some streamlining to do, and we've got some tough decisions to make, and I'm not afraid to make them.
Let's go.
Go ahead. Actually, and I haven't read the Clarion Ledger piece, and it might be in this and that one, but we didn't have it in ours.
Mm-hmm.
Your first bankruptcy was a chapter?
It was a 13.
Mm-hmm. And that was the firm, or that was you?
That was the firm.
Okay.
And that was me as well.
So you were in that?
Right. In the firm.
And then your second was a chapter?
Just me. 13.
13 as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And about how far apart did they happen?
About 7 years, I believe. Mm-hmm.
All right. That's it. I happened to just read the interview, and there's some questions from readers underneath there, and I just want to know what
Sure. Y'all, you want to go to some development questions next?
Yeah, I would love to. Okay. And since you brought up the situation of money, I'm sure you're aware that the city needs to spend millions of dollars in infrastructure and sewage, you know, water, sewage, roads, and so forth. And at the same time, the legislature doesn't seem to be willing to give the city the say-so on how to spend a proposed 1% sales tax increase.
Yes.
So tell me specifically, what do you intend to do as mayor to work through that situation, and would you continue the fight to, you know, kind of home rule on the tax situation?
Okay, I will. Yeah, let me answer the last question first. Any mayor certainly would love to have the power, the authority to select commissioners and have control of city funds, but you have to look at it in terms of priorities. What's the most important thing for the citizens of Jackson? I think we have to keep our eye on the ball in terms of putting first things first. We have a $1 billion infrastructure problem within the city of Jackson. The consent decree with EPA is at a $400 million that have to be spent within 14 years. I think, quite frankly, it's just imprudent to bicker over the fact in terms of the commission. From this standpoint, all of the funds that are expended would have to be spent inside the city of Jackson. Okay, we can, once we show ourselves, if that's the case, if once we show ourselves to be you know, good stewards of city resources and put together the comprehensive plan that's going to be required in order to spend the funds anyway. I believe the legislation requires that the plan be put together in terms of how the funds will be used, and the city certainly would have to be at the table in that regard. So once the plan is put together and those funds are then being expended, we know that that is the paramount thing for the citizens of Jackson, and that is to get it fixed. Now, in terms of going forward, certainly there's opportunity to get with state officials in terms of revisiting the issue of the commission. But starting out, we're losing $15 million annually just based on the sales within the city of Jackson. So this was on the books about 2 years ago. So conceivably, we've lost an opportunity to have about $30 million to go to the infrastructural problem. Now, you weigh that against the most recent vote by the city council to issue, about $10, $12 million. for, you know, street, I know that's for street repair, but just in terms of the total infrastructural problems that we have, that would be a way to get at it. But your question was just specifically on that, but I want to speak to another part of that as well.
Sure, go ahead.
In terms of the other avenues to get at this infrastructural problem. I know it's going to be a tough and a tall order to do, but I would also revisit this whole issue of some type of annual appropriation for the city of Jackson from the state of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And I think that the way we do that is to make sure that we are developing our relationship with the state officials. It is really unfortunate to me that the city of Jackson waits so very long before we really start to try to meet with state officials prior to and even, you know, during the legislative session. As I understand it, the coast does a much better job from Ocean Springs to maybe Bay St. Louis. They get together and maybe get on a van and come up to to Jackson to start to meet with state officials to make their case for the coast. I don't believe that the city of Jackson puts together any type of reception for state officials. I believe that the mayor's campaign manager, Trey Daniels, mentioned the fact that it was one state official, I don't know whether it was the lieutenant governor or Speaker of the House, went to City Hall. And I believe it's been the first time that that's been done in the tenure of the Harvey Johnson administration. And, you know, was kind of touted as a positive thing, but I really thought it was an unfortunate thing that when you're speaking of a capital city, that we're not having more interaction with our state officials, and that's just a requirement. We need to have the conversation to not just be about what the city of Jackson needs, but what the capital city needs. Mm-hmm. That's where I believe the conversation needs to really start, and we need to really focus on. Because when people come into the state of Mississippi, they are coming by and large to the capital, and it's a kind of a first impression. And the question is, what do they see as a first impression?
So is it your position that the city needs more lobbyists, or that the mayor needs to play a more active role in building relationships with state lawmakers?
The latter. We've got to do that. It's just imperative that we do that. The mayor's, I think, role is to be the real ambassador for the city of Jackson. And people do business with people. And that's, you know, in private sector, and it's also in public sector. You tend to be able to just get more from them when they know you and understand what your vision is, what your plan is for the city, and you get them to buy in and certainly help them to understand how it helps them as well, because when Jackson grows, the state of Mississippi grows. So we got to develop these relationships and really nurture them.
What would your pitch be to state officials to lure either the Department of Revenue to downtown Jackson or a similar state agency to fill in some of the vacant office space in downtown?
That the state of Mississippi cannot really thrive without the city of Jackson thriving. You just cannot have a population of 177 or so thousand people and it be your capital city. And the capital city just has too much to offer, but also if you don't put some time and attention in this city, we can end up in a place that none of us want to be. And we need to just keep preaching that until we all get it. And it's not just the state officials, but it's all of us. It's all hands on deck. We are at a critical point in this city. And in this state, we're at a critical point. Sometimes I want to grab some people I know and just shake them. We are at a critical point. And quite frankly, that is why I'm in this race. You know, we talk about the urgency of now, and that's where we are. We didn't look like this 4 years ago, 16 years ago. This city has some serious problems, not just from an infrastructural standpoint. We've got issues with with the crime in the city. We've got issues with education. And unless we figure out that we're not going to get out of this until we all get around the table and come up with a comprehensive plan to do it and be serious about it, and that our want to gets big enough, we're going to end up being like some of these other larger urban cities, where we're going to be trying to dig ourselves out of a hole, and we're going to be it's going to be kind of never ending for us.
Let me jump in there and play a little bit of devil's advocate.
Sure.
Because I know a lot of people out there would say this.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between the city and the state is a very difficult one, with decades and arguably longer of mm-hmm. history there, and you know, race dynamics
certainly,
and all of these other things. And you know, we've had the mayor sit in this room any number of times in endorsement situations and talk about the efforts that were being made over infrastructure. I mean, infrastructure is one of the things he's talked about to us for years.
True.
And at least talk about it. I'm not saying done well or whatever. I'm not taking a position on it. But talk about the efforts to go mm-hmm. and build those relationships at the legislature mm-hmm. and talk about lobbying efforts and those kind of things.
Okay.
And so the devil's advocacy here is that someone might say, or ask, if you're being naive about how difficult that is, and to go back to the commission about the need for a certain amount of independence on Jackson's side so that we don't give up the farm mm-hmm. to get the money into the city, and then most of it is spent downtown Jackson mm-hmm. or northeast Jackson. Mm-hmm. And so how would you address okay. those kinds
Certainly.
Of concerns and convince people that you're going to be able to do something different, having just sat here and admitted that that you know Kenneth Stokes well and know mm-hmm. you know, and have relationships with, you know, some controversial figures.
That's fair.
How do mm-hmm. you convince
sure.
the readers that
that's
you can do that?
In terms of that, because efforts have been made, and certainly Mayor Johnson has made efforts in getting that done. I will tell you that I'm not disillusioned by what issues we have in the state of Mississippi. I grew up here. I grew up on Ridgeway Street, and you may know the story that my father was one of the first on the scene when Mayor Evans was killed.
Hmm.
So I have a real awareness of where I am in terms of our history within the state and race relations and all of that. I would share with you this in terms of what I was a part of and getting some things done. And one particular example is the Mississippi Veterans Memorial Stadium project with JSU. Jackson State sought to acquire the Memorial Stadium. And first blush in terms of that, because the House Bill 1158 was to transfer the stadium to the University of Mississippi Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
I became aware of it through an associate and friend that I had come out of committee. And when I became aware that Dr. Myers was not aware of it, nor our lobbyists and people that were supporting Jackson State, and certainly understanding that JSU does not have a campus stadium, then I started to reach out to state officials and letting them know that Jackson State was not in agreement with that legislation. So as a result, I ended up meeting with officials, Hank Bounds with IHL, and then Lieutenant Governor, now Governor Phil Bryan, and just a number of the folks, Kevin Upchurch. And so the discussion started to be, well, what do we do about this, in that the medical center needs a cafeteria and the Jackson State needs a home stadium, so how do we work that? What we found out was that it was no attempt to slight JSU, but the focus was on what was needed for the medical center. And when I was, given the charge by Dr. Myers to take the lead on that, we were able to redirect the conversation, redirect the conversation about whatever the miscues have been in the past for JSU. That, you know, certainly JSU was in need of the stadium, and we started to talk and have the conversations about what was needed, not just for JSU, but also for the medical center and the medical corridor. And ultimately, we got that legislation done with state officials, both, quite frankly, African-American and white state officials that initially were not in favor of JSU becoming the owner of the stadium for a couple of issues, one being that it was quite a bit to bite off and chew in terms of JSU acquiring that. So during those discussions and getting around the table and coming to a point where, excuse me one second, coming to a point where ultimately the goal was to try to get JSU a stadium that they were in need of, and also with the awareness that the medical center, that stadium was in the path of growth. But what I believe that I do best as a professional and as a lawyer is to negotiate, to problem solve, and to get some things done, because notwithstanding the fact that we have a history of people that may not see things the same, but what the challenge is and what I've been able to do over the past is to coalesce around what is most important, not just for one side or the other, but the bigger picture of, you may not get all of what you want, but that's the art of negotiation. You'll get some of what you want, and you have to give up something. Now, having said that, in an effort to reach out to state officials, to reach out to county officials, and to make sure that we don't give away the store, so to speak, that's always the interest that I would have and the charge that I would have. I'm speaking from a standpoint of priorities. If I had my druthers, the city of Jackson would have full control of those funds, full control of those funds. But the question becomes, is it better to miss out on about $15 million a year and not have those full control of those funds, or is it better to say, well, yeah, it's not the preferred way, but if every day that we don't do something about this infrastructure, the cost goes up. It doesn't stabilize. When people drive on roads and we don't have a maintenance fund in place, those roads are graded from, what is it, 1,000 to zero. The roads in Jackson, the reason it's so costly is that we haven't been putting any maintenance into them. When you maintain the roads, it's cheaper to fix. But if you let it get from 1,000 to zero and the cost goes up exponentially each day or month or year that we fail to do it. So it becomes an issue of dollars for us. I'm just suggesting to the people of Jackson, let's have that fight a little later. For now, let's take advantage of what we have.
Okay.
Yeah, let's take 60 seconds to do that.
Yes, I know. We need to give you a second there.
And if anybody's, is this fresh coffee down here?
Yes.
Supposedly. Do you want to turn that off and back on so you know where it's
at?
So we don't have all of our chit chat in the middle. Although people love that.